Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Is pension tax relief for the chop in the emergency budget? If so, what should you do now? Are there any safe haven investments anymore? We ponder volatile equity and bond markets. And what's the point of an independent financial advisor? We look at the trend towards DIY investing. All this to come in this week's FT Money Show. I'm Matthew Vincent, and I'll be giving you the lowdown on all of these money matters in downloadable form with my colleagues from FT Money, Alice Ross.
Hello.
And Ellen Kelleher.
Hello.
And our special studio guest, Adrian Locock, Senior Investment Advisor at Independent Financial Advisors, Best Invest.
Hello.
So let's start with the money news. This week, tax experts warned of more probable tax changes in the emergency budget on June the 22nd. As well as the expected rise in capital gains tax, many advisers believe that pension tax relief will be restricted further. Grant Thornton predicts that it's likely that the £150,000 income limit for qualifying for higher rate relief will be lowered, while others believe that pension contributions will still get higher rate tax relief, but annual contributions will be limited for everyone to, say, £30,000. Either way, paying into a pension looks unlikely to be as tax efficient as it is now. So, Alice, does this really mean that we just have 2 weeks to maximise our pension contributions?
Well, you and I probably have slightly longer, Matthew, because basically what we're looking at is at the moment you're restricted on pension tax relief if you earn over £130,000. And the main chat has been that they're probably going to lower that, or that they might lower that. But I don't think that they'll lower it completely. The Lib Dems were proposing scrapping high rate tax relief altogether, but that's not a very Tory proposal, and I think it's unlikely that they'll do that, certainly straight away, and you would expect there to be more warning of that happening. But what might happen, and what Grant Thornton in fact was saying that they think will happen, is that they will lower the threshold at which your high rate relief is curtailed, but probably only to maybe who knows, but 120,000. So if you're earning below that, you probably don't have to worry.
If you are one of those people, unlike us, who is on six figures in terms of income, presumably there is then a case for putting some extra money into a pension in the next 2 weeks.
There is quite a strong case for doing that, actually. I mean, this is kind of unlike the debate over capital gains tax, which is also ongoing at the moment, which is, you know, if I'm worried about it going up, should I sell my investments? Should I sell my second house now? Because that's a bit of a gamble. You might be selling at the wrong time. But with paying into your pension, there's not really a particularly bad time to do it. I mean, particularly at the moment when the stock market is not looking great. So arguably, that's quite a good time to make some sort of investment. So it's the kind of thing that can easily be brought forward. So if you are going to maximise your contribution this year anyway, then, and you have the money to do so, then you might as well do it in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, no one ever suffered by putting money into a pension sooner rather than later, I suppose. Adrian, are you seeing any clients coming to you saying, I'm worried about this, I want to put money into a pension now?
I think we're seeing a balance of people waiting to see what happens in the budget, but others coming in and trying to get money put in ahead of the budget announcement. And I think it's for those who can, as you said, if you've got the money to do so, then it'd be a good idea to get your contributions done sooner rather than later. And the key is you don't actually have to put it into the stock market. You could hold it in the cash and then wait to invest. So you don't actually have to invest straight away.
One thing that some people have expressed concern about is if pension tax relief is curtailed, there could be a falling off in pension investment are falling off in demand for certain types of pension. We've got access to an exclusive survey by our sister title, Pensions Management, which says that there'll be a 20% fall in demand for self-invested personal pensions if higher rate tax relief is curtailed. Is this a danger, do you think, Alice?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, basically, the rule of thumb that accountants are saying at the moment is if come next April you think that you're not going to be a basic rate taxpayer when you retire, if you think you're still going to be a higher rate taxpayer when you retire, it makes no sense really to pay into a pension. That's whatever segment of people earn over 130,000 at the moment, possibly by then over 100,000. So that is going to have a significant impact on the amount of pensions being taken out. And there's also an impact not just at the SIP level, but at the company pension level. A lot of firms at the moment are looking at introducing alternatives to pension schemes for their employers. So EFIRBs is the big thing that everyone's doing at the moment, which is, see if I can get it right, employer-funded... retirement benefit schemes, EFIRBs. Quite a few people are putting those in place now, and they are an alternative to pension arrangements.
So it's certainly a time for people to look at all the arrangements that are available to them. And if you are earning six figures or more, perhaps think about putting some money in now. It can't do you any harm at all. Thanks very much for that, Alice. And for more details on the impact of tax changes on your pension planning and that exclusive survey that I mentioned on self-invested personal pensions, look out for the articles in FT Money with this weekend's FT and online at ft.com/money. Still to come on the show, should you bother with a financial advisor or just do it yourself? First, though, safe haven investments. In the old days, it was simple. When the stock market was looking volatile, risk-averse investors simply moved into gilts, the safe, dependable, income-generating government bonds. But in the past few months, everything has changed. Equity market volatility has surged. The VIX index of volatility, which has an average reading of 20, rose to hit 45 and still stands well into the 30s. But at the same time, government bond prices across Europe have all fallen as the government debt crisis that started in Greece has spread across the continent. And it's not over yet. This week, Spanish bonds were downgraded below AAA status, triggering a sell-off as investors sought safer holdings. So, Ellen, where can investors look if they want to be in something that's safer, that's lower volatility?
Well, it's difficult to call any parts of the market right now safe, but there are obviously bits of it that look safer than others. And you're seeing a flight into gilts, for example, and U.S. Treasury bonds in recent months, with tens of billions of dollars coming into these investments and foreigners just rushing in to buy them. But a lot of analysts say, you know, that's completely overplayed because, you know, the truth is that the U.S. economy, neither the U.S. economy or the British economy, is in a particularly good state, and these markets could soon tumble as well. But Adrian is here, and he is obviously more of an expert on such matters than I am. Adrian, what are you telling clients to do in terms of?
I think the key thing is to remain sort of patient and don't panic, because the volatility sort of means markets will go up and down, and make sure you've got exposure to traditional defensive elements. So having exposure to the US dollar, either through gilt investments, government debt, or through equity investment, is quite a good thing, because the dollar tends to be a defensive safe haven. Likewise, gold tends to be a traditional one and seems to be holding up quite well and doing its defensive function, albeit there are more investors coming in, speculators coming in, so there tends to be a little bit more volatility in there than we've seen in the past. A new area is somewhere sort of like absolute return funds, which gained prominence in 2008 and 2009, and they protect investors from the full impact of a downside and of a falling market, and in some instances can make money when markets fall. So spread your risk and diversify across all sort of different asset classes.
So what sort of returns do you think someone could expect in sort of with a well-diversified portfolio in the next year if they're very, very careful with their money?
I think considering where we've been, it's probably quite difficult to expect high double-digit returns, but I think sort of high single-digit returns is possible. It does depend on how the sort of Greek and Spanish crisis is resolved, and there are obviously issues with getting that dealt with. Once that's moved on, then we could see the market recover on relief that it's been dealt with. So it does depend on what that is, but I think, you know, looking at single-digit returns is probably not unrealistic at the moment.
And what do you think will happen to gilts in the next 12 months?
It's likely with the issuance that gilt prices will probably continue to fall and yields will go up. So for most investors, you want to stay sort of clear of the gilts for present and perhaps look into sort of strategic and dynamic bond funds where they can manage the returns that they're getting and invest strategically in different areas of that market and improve the yields.
Okay, that's interesting. And sort of, do you have a view on emerging markets? Do you think that they are poised to outperform as if we move out of recession and towards a period of stability?
Yeah, I mean, the story has always been about emerging markets for the last couple of years because they don't have the high level of debts that the Western governments have. Their currencies tend to be cheaper in value than the Western currencies. So not only will you get growth in the economies, but you'll also get appreciation in the currency. So investors should look to have exposure into emerging markets and Asia-Pacific regions, but be aware that they have come in the past with higher volatility. So you may be just trading volatile regions in the short term. The key with emerging markets and Asia Pacific is the longer term story and getting the growth over sort of a 5-10 year period.
Any funds that you like, sort of recommend?
Yeah, I mean, the Aberdeen Emerging Markets and First State Asia Pacific funds are two very good fund groups that have expertise in that region, and they've got good teams and good researchers and resources there. So I'd recommend those two funds.
Can I just ask about US treasuries? Ellen mentioned that there's been this sort of flight to supposed safety there. As Ellen also points out, it's not as if the US economy is so incredibly strong. Do you consider the US government bonds to be a safe haven still?
I think America is not quite as bad as other countries. I mean, it's not as safe and as robust as it could be. But I think, generally speaking, the view is that America will probably continue to lead the global recovery. Having gone into recession, was China is the engine room for growth, but America is the consumer and the demand. And the signs are that that's doing relatively well. It's not firing all guns, but it is doing okay. So I think the sort of short-term risks of the American government and therefore the US treasuries is probably nowhere near severe as other areas. So people still see it as a safe haven, and it's relatively safe. The issue is, though, you just don't get paid much for holding that investment at the moment.
No, exactly, which has to be another consideration for anyone seeking safety. Well, thanks for that, Adrian and Ellen. And for more on what constitutes a new safe haven and how to get your money into it, look out for Ellen's article in the Money section of this weekend's FT and online at ft.com/money. And finally today, independent financial advisors. I'm sitting next to one right now, so I need to be a little bit careful about what I say. But according to new research, investors have been turning their backs on financial advisors and doing far more DIY investing since the credit crunch hit. According to the study, which is carried out for Money Week, nearly half of all private investors now say that they make their own decisions because they don't trust their financial advisors any longer. Alice, do you think this is a significant trend? Is it new?
There are two sides to this, basically. On the one hand, it has become a lot easier for private investors over the past decade, maybe, to manage their own money with the growth of online trading platforms and buying things over the internet. So there has been this kind of gradual movement towards DIY investing. But there's also this trend that's hastened this over the past 2 years since the credit crunch of, well, I mean, since the stock market really kind of plummeted in, say, October 2008, which is when this study is based from. Investors have occasionally blamed their advisors for the falls in their portfolios. Now, financial advisors that I've spoken to have, you know, quite fairly said, well, look, you know, you can't really blame financial advisors for the credit crunch, which is a very fair point. And to a certain extent, private investors are maybe being a little bit unfair in saying, in blaming their financial advisors for this. At the same time, there have been problems over the past couple of years that have come out of the credit crunch. We've seen mis-selling problems over structured products, for example, and other things. So at the same time, it is fair that they would maybe try and take matters into their own hands.
And I suppose mis-selling, which has, you know, gone on for longer than just the last few years, is at the heart of some of the distrust. But Adrian, we've got this big regulatory change coming, the Retail Distribution Review, no upfront commission for selling products. Do you think that's a chance for IFAs to win back the trust of these DIY investors?
I think so. I mean, I think with the RDR, you've got an opportunity to really identify when advice can add value and actually provide additional services to it, because it's not just a simple case of recommending a fund. There's a lot more structure behind giving advice, planning behind it as well. And I think there's different types of advice. It's not just investment advice, financial planning advice as well. So I think with RDR, we can be in a position where we can attribute a sort of a solution and value to the advice, and it be a bit more transparent and clearer for the client and the investor to know exactly what they're going to get out of it and what to expect. I think that's the key thing to it, what they can expect to get out of the advice.
And Alice, Adrian makes quite a good point that it's not just about investment advice. There's financial planning, there's tax planning, all that sort of thing. Does this survey show whether people are being sort of totally cut and dried, like 100% DIY or 100% advised, or is it a bit of a mixture in some cases?
Yeah, some people are doing a mixture. I mean, it's, you know, as you said, it's nearly half are managing their money completely by themselves, but then a further, in total it's 90% are doing more of their money management themselves. So a further 40% or whatever that is are you know, kind of splitting it between doing some themselves and doing some with an advisor. And that, you know, that makes sense. I mean, you can maybe buy your own stocks and shares yourself, and a lot of DIY people like to kind of play the markets and like to buy their own shares, and you can do that quite easily on online trading platforms through a stockbroker, execution-only services. But at the same time, you know, people, especially those with more money, will need access to proper financial advice when they're doing stuff like sorting out their inheritance tax or maybe setting up a trust, you know, at the moment with pension planning, which is just so much harder than it has been. So it does probably make sense to have a mixture of the two.
And Adrian, just finally, what's the one thing that you think people should never try to do themselves?
I think it's trying to take on things you don't understand or are complex, and actually getting advice can be just sometimes a simple case of having a second opinion to help you make sure you're on the right track and you've got the right view and you understand fully what you're actually doing. Because I think the difficulty is where people just sort of take something on and they're not fully aware or understand that the complexity or the risks that they're taking. So get a second opinion. I mean, that's what advice is there for, is really just a second opinion.
I know that feeling when it comes to actual DIY. I'm having to hire an electrician to change an outside light bulb because I can't actually reach it properly. Anyway, thanks very much for that, Adrian and Alison. For more on this move towards DIY investing, look out for Alice's articles in this weekend's FT and also in the money section. But that's all for this week's FT Money Show. Remember, you will find weekday news updates and all of these stories on our website, ft.com/money. And you can now find all of our interactive web content brought together in one place on the brand new Money Matters page. You'll find our latest blog posts, columns that you can comment on, beginner's guides, top tips, and details of our live Q&A sessions, the next of which is on investing in gold on Thursday, the June the 10th. So do send in your questions and your comments and your thoughts and your gripes to ft.com/moneymatters. We'll be back next week with another lowdown in downloadable form. But until then, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from Alice, Ellen, and our special guest, Adrian Locock from Best Invest.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.